This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 15th of January 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 15th of January 2021. Which this week have been edited by Sue Frayne and Anne Brew. Your reader today is John Richards.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And I should say at this stage, despite the lockdown, we are permitted to come into the studio and do our recordings, and we will continue to try to do this. But if, for some reason, you don't receive one week, it's because we've not been able to get to the studio. So we'll try and maintain the schedule as long as we can. Now, the main headlines this week: hospital under COVID-19 pressure, more pressure over Silver Hill, and free cabs for jabs for residents. So, John, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Yes, hospital under COVID-19 pressure. Staff at the Trust, which runs Winchester Hospital, are facing increasing pressures, with patients being moved to the area to help other struggling hospitals. The Chronicle understands that the sites run by Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, are being called upon to take COVID patients from other trusts across the South East. Whilst the Trust did not disclose where patients are being transferred from, it's understood that those who are critically ill with the virus have been moved to Southampton from Kent. Patients in the South East have also been moved to hospitals as far away as Plymouth, Bristol and Leeds as cases rise and fears grow that London and Kent could run out of hospital beds. Hampshire Hospital's chief nurse Julie Dawes said, "The NHS across the South East is under increasing pressure as we see a rise in the number of people who have tested positive for COVID-19 who need hospital care. The NHS is offering support to each other to deal with the increased demand, particularly in relation to critical care. However, this is not a new process and critical care networks have long worked together in this way. Despite the demand for this type of support growing, we can confirm we currently have a very small number of patients receiving care who have been transferred from outside our immediate area." Figures from the Trust show there were 215 patients in its hospitals as of Monday, 84 at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, 126 in Basingstoke and 5 in Andover. This compares to 163 on January the 4th and 148 during the first wave peak in April. According to the latest data on December the 5th from Public Health England, 7 patients were on ventilators. And on Friday last week, the Trust said that beds are being used by 470 non-COVID patients. News of the escalation has forced HHFT to make changes to its policy on face coverings, with members of the public asked to wrap for a surgical mask on arrival at the one of Trust sites. I'm sorry, that's not very clear. I'll read it again. News of the escalation has forced HHFT to make changes to its policy on face coverings, with members of the public asked to swap for a surgical mask on arrival at one of the Trust sites. Surgical masks will be found at the entrances and offer better protection. A spokesman said, "To help keep our patients and staff safe, face coverings will no longer be permitted on any of our hospital sites. Instead, all patients, visitors and outpatients are asked to wear a surgical face mask. Keeping everyone safe is our top priority. Surgical face masks offer a greater level of protection and can be found at every entrance to our hospitals at Andover, Basingstoke and Winchester." This week, health bosses have also confirmed there are no plans for a Nightingale Hospital or a similar service across Hampshire, but they said the temporary mortuary set up in Basingstoke last year remains in place. A spokesman for Hampshire County Council said, as part of our area's response to the pandemic, a temporary mortuary site has been established in Basingstoke. If required, this facility would serve the whole of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight region, including Southampton and Portsmouth. Speaking at the meeting of the Health and Adult Social Care Select Committee at Hampshire County Council on Monday, Simon Bryant, the Hampshire Director of Public Health, said the new variant of COVID is present across Hampshire. The increasing pressure on the NHS and health bosses comes as multiple videos have been posted online over the last week, claiming the coronavirus pandemic has been exaggerated, showing footage of empty hospitals in Hampshire. The videos are mostly filmed by individuals walking through hospital corridors and are posted in Facebook groups filled with coronavirus sceptics and anti-lockdown activists. The posts have sparked fears that people could be lulled into a false sense of security, raising their risk of contracting the deadly virus. Whilst HHFT confirmed no incidents of filming had occurred at any of their hospital sites, they emphasised that the hospitals are now under increasing pressure. Nurse Dawes said, our staff are working tirelessly to ensure patients continue to receive the best care, including helping out with extra shifts at short notice and working in different departments to support other teams. A police spokesman confirmed that a 30-year-old woman had been handed a £200 fixed penalty notice by officers investigating reports of someone visiting hospitals in Hampshire and taking photographs. The spokesman said she was fined because she did not have a valid reason for leaving her home.
More pressure over Silver Hill. The City Council may have closed its consultation over the latest Silver Hill proposals, but it still faces fierce criticism. Sir Anthony Walker has written a letter to Project Chiefs. He is the chairman of the Winchester Deserves Better campaign group, which consists of 9 local professionals, including former City Councillor Kim Gottlieb. The letter says, we've always supported the regeneration of this important area, but we do not believe that the strategy being adopted by the Council will lead to a successful outcome and make the best of the opportunity that this site represents. A central concern is that the Council is relinquishing control of the project before many aspects, especially its public benefits, have been adequately defined and secured. No developer partner is going to invest in the project without assuming a controlling position, and the ability of the Council to manage the project after a contract is made is very limited. The letter then lists 9 key features of the latest plans which the group wish to see changed. These are developers. A central tenet of the SPD is that the site's regeneration should involve several developers, and it is a mistake for the Council to ignore this crucial guidance. Master plan. No scheme of scale or importance could hope to succeed without the benefit of a master plan. This should be prepared under the auspices of the Council, not a developer. Buses. Allowing buses to run through the site spoils the public realm and the regeneration concept. The future location of the bus station must be resolved by the Council. Movement strategy. A prerequisite to the regeneration is that this must be completed and adopted so the whole city becomes more pedestrian and cycle friendly. The Brooks. The heritage and environmental benefits of opening them up is not being secured. How this work is carried out and by whom should be clearly defined. The museum. The opportunity to create a world-class facility and a new major attraction for the city has been missed. Archaeology. What could be a priceless asset has yet to be fully investigated and adequately protected. No consideration for its exhibition has been made. King's Walk. Whilst we support the interim use of existing buildings, the retention of such a poor quality building for a decade or more will continue to blight the whole area. And details. The written and drawn material is too vague and unsupported by evidence to provide any confidence in the viability and coherence of the Council's proposal. The Council will host a public open forum, which will be held at 6 p.m. on January the 26th, to discuss feedback from the consultation. The letter concludes, "We remain supportive of the principle of regeneration. However, we very strongly advise that the current proposal to seek a development partner is stayed and that the detailed plan or alternative plans be considered in any meaningful way and consulted upon by the public. A site of such significance to the city deserves nothing less."
Free cabs for jabs for residents. Elderly Winchester residents who are scheduled to get the vaccine can now make the journey without any travel fees. The fundraising initiative Cabs for Jabs is hoping for £20,000 in donations. This will allow local taxi drivers to complete 1,000 free rides to and from vaccine hubs, ensuring all vulnerable people in the community can attend their appointments. Tim Perry, who is spearheading the scheme, said, "We're a group of Winchester friends who are raising funds for old and vulnerable people in our community to provide them with a free taxi service to get them to and from the COVID vaccination centre for their COVID vaccination. With the help of local Winchester taxi firms, we aim to provide free taxi rides to as many people who need a lift as possible. We hope it will take a little bit of the stress out of the day, knowing a taxi will already be paid for getting them to and from the vaccination centre safely. We hope people will start using the service ASAP, and we can help older and vulnerable members of our community. So far, £1,506 has been raised towards the scheme. To book a taxi, call 01962 884343. I'll read that again. 01962 884343.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. So firstly, the death announcements for this week. Barnes, Les Barnes, formerly of Twyford, died at Basingstoke Hospital, aged 86. Burgess, Eileen Rosina Burgess, died peacefully on the 2nd of January. Excuse me. Derrick, Michael John Derrick, died peacefully at home, aged 77. Gray, Margaret Jane Gray, died peacefully at home, aged 85. Herridge, Donovan Herridge, died on the 5th of January at St Catherine's Care Home, aged 98. Malthus, Joyce Malthus, died peacefully on the 6th of January, aged 96. McBain, Ian Nielsen McBain, died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 4th of January, aged 85. Page, Rodney Page, died peacefully at Brendan Care at Otterbourne, aged 84. Paul, Marigold June Paul, died suddenly at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 5th of January, aged 86. Quinn, Sean Patrick Quinn, died at home on the 3rd of January, aged 57. And Richmond, Barbara Ann Richmond, died peacefully on the 14th of December. And now, John, may we have a Christian comment, please?
Yes, which is written this week by Rosemary A. Baker, and it's headlined Minister's Conference. Even though I am retired, that's supernumerary official title, I have been invited to the annual two-day Ministers' Conference run by the Southampton District of the Methodist Church. The big difference is that instead of holding it in a small hotel in Bournemouth, it's going to be of necessity digital, i.e. on Zoom. I used to go regularly, although not staying overnight, because of my other job responsibilities and my share of dog care. Once I took the dogs, but it was a nightmare parking them safely and nowhere nearby to really walk them. So this year I'm tempted to participate, as I don't have to get up early to drive there, I don't have to park, I can arrange dog walks or let them into the garden, and I can answer the door for deliveries as my partner has had a hip replacement. So, is it worth participating? The title is Signs of the Times, and promises to have sessions with exciting speakers who wouldn't normally be available. I guess they can cover long distances more easily and only have to give up a fraction of their time. In the past, they've usually had one speaker for both days to justify the speaker's time and expense. One of the sessions on the first day is called Reading the Signs of the Times in a Pandemic and Beyond. This should prove interesting. It's being delivered by an Anglican priest. Yesterday I read in an extract from the Telegraph online that the Church of England was one of the many institutions that was struggling under the strain of the pandemic. The writer found this surprising. Rather than becoming a focal point of community and spiritual support, it has become, he said, mired in restrictions. He went so far as to say he wondered if it could survive in the long term. He was, of course, talking about the traditional model of the church, with its buildings and people in the pews. But whereas the numbers in church have declined further, the number of people looking at online services has been huge. Large numbers of searches on prayer have also been reported on Google. So people are searching still for purpose and meaning in their lives and wanting some spiritual input, but in different ways. There was also, in this article, strong criticism of the leadership of the church at a time of national crisis, a crisis about death. The writer saw this as a great opportunity for the church, if only it was prepared to embrace it and try doing things differently.
Thank you, John. Now we move on to letters to the editor. The first one is from Roger Mallin, Goringfield Takedown, about Royal Down. Sir, why do people automatically object to every development proposal made regardless? Surely the words consider or appraise would have more relevance. For example, the proposals for the Hursley area do have some justification and cannot be written off easily with sarcastic or hysterical comments. Winchester is boxed in by the South Downs National Park to the east and south, precluding any development between Kingsworthy and Coldon Common. And immediately to the south is Eastleigh. The existing Barton Farm development and a possible brownfield site at the Sir John Moore Barracks to the north will satisfy Winchester's housing needs in the immediate future. But after that, where do we go that's not to the west and Greenfield? Unfortunately, unless there is a dramatic change in man's evolution, we will continue to need homes and places to work. The issue is where. The Royal Down proposal has some positive points. It's close to Winchester, Chalmersford and Romsey is nearby. It's situated in a shallow valley between two ridges, so it's virtually invisible from the surrounding area. Its size means it would satisfy our development needs for a considerable time, and it's closer to centres of employment in the Southampton area. Its location also means residents living there would be less likely to impact on Winchester's already creaking infrastructure, and Shawford Station is close by. One could argue a poor road network, but that's common to all areas of Winchester, though an extension of the A34 south through the area to Southampton Docks would be of great benefit as well as relieving the M3. No one wants to see the countryside developed, and this is probably the first proposal of many to come, but the fact they come out of the blue doesn't mean they should not be discussed in a rational manner. It could be the best of a bad lot. In the meantime, it's easy to see why the only thing not really objected to was the national park boundary.
This letter is from Paul Wing of Kingsworthy. Sir, in 1967, whilst the UK pop charts featured hits such as Good Vibrations, Yellow Submarine and Strangers in the Night, across the pond, Winchester Cathedral became a number one hit in the USA charts. 50 years later, it was suggested to the then Dean of Winchester that the cathedral might mark this anniversary. Jeff Stevens, the song's composer and lyricist, was approached about this and not only gave his full support, but also rewrote the lyrics to celebrate and help with the cathedral appeal. This new version was subsequently recorded by the cathedral choristers under the direction of Andrew Lumsden and also performed at a gala fundraising concert. Jeff and the Dean were both present at the concert. Sadly, Jeff died last month, just 2 weeks before Dean James, so it was very appropriate that at the Dean's funeral last week, the music before the service included Winchester Cathedral. We will miss both James and Jeff, two very gifted men in very different spheres with an unusual link. That's from Paul Wing Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy.
This letter from David Tozer, who's a councillor from Littleton and Harestock Parish Council. Future of the barracks. Sir, the recent announcement of development plans for Flowerdown, the Sir John Moore Barracks, will result in a major impact on North Winchester. Regrettably, the associated consultation with the community is far from adequate. The Defence Infrastructure Organisation, the DIO, consultants' postal publicity failed to reach all local residents. The community is expected to provide considered views based only on planning sketches and vague statements, with no access being given for visiting the site. Surely the Army is capable of organising a community open day so local people have a better sense of what the site can offer. Otherwise, the community is being asked to respond blind. The DIO are commissioning and undertaking various surveys and assessments, but given the scheme's proponents set the terms of reference and appoint the surveyors and consultants, these cannot be regarded as independent. Without coordinating with the local community and providing full transparency, the community will then be expected to take the results of these surveys on trust. The DIO has access to resources and monies beyond that of the local community and parish council. An enlightened developer would put aside a sum of money to allow the community to at least arrange its own surveys and seek advice to help formulate its response. As it is, there's a mismatch of resources between developers and the community, with all the respective advantages and disadvantages that that brings. A pre-Christmas DIO-led online webinar was strictly controlled. It is known that numerous submitted questions were conveniently ignored by the host. This initial consultation is being conducted over the Christmas and New Year period when people's focus has no doubt been elsewhere. The deadline for submissions is January the 22nd. There's a clear sense that the whole consultation process is being rushed through during the latest pandemic restrictions. Given the scheme's potential impact on North Winchester, the threat to pristine chalkland habitats, the site's heritage, and potential gains of community assets, a more collaborative and sensitive approach is required. The developers need to genuinely work with the community rather than imposing plans on the community. And that's from David Tozer, Littleton and Harestock Parish Council Councillor, Burriton Road, Harestock.
Macbeth, take two, from Dr. Tony Saunders. Sir, bubble, bubble, tears and trouble, friends, bairns or colleagues bubble. When can tier three meet again? Inside, outside or in rain? When the vaccination's done? When the COVID battle's won? That clever little piece is from Dr. Tony Saunders, Main Road, Otterbourne.
And this short letter from Peter Walker, Party Leaflets. "Sir, I was really surprised to have received a leaflet from the Winchester Liberal Democrats 2 days ago. I was very surprised by this, as I understood that during the national lockdown, only essential deliveries should be made. I have to assume then aren't too bothered about taking precautions to reduce the spread of COVID-19. And that's from Peter Walker, Field Close, Compton.
Judith Martin in this letter writes about St Clement's. "Sir, you report December the 31st and January the 7th that Winchester City Council, after commissioning two sets of plans and allowing two planning applications awarded to itself to go out of time, will now lease the site for a new St Clement surgery to a private developer. A report to Cabinet said the preferred bidder was very experienced, and by selling the site it removed the risk of the council developing it itself. I'm neither a developer nor an economist, but I know that wisdom says you have to speculate to accumulate, and that councils can borrow money from the Public Works Loan Board, with which WCC already has a relationship, more cheaply than any other entity. I would also have thought that unless you're reckoning on COVID-19 actually destroying the entire NHS, the parts of it that aren't already in private hands, a GP surgery in the centre of a wealthy city with an ageing population was a sound investment, which is doubtless why the developer, Assura PLC, is keen to engage. What I really fail to understand, though, is how a 150-year lease for £930,000 at a peppercorn rent of £1 a year can be a good deal for the city when car park revenue on the site, presumably not under the pandemic, was £25,000 a year. Could an actual economist put me right? Doesn't that capital sum represent a mere 40 years? Doesn't that mean that Assura, 2019 revenue, £99.3 million, and part of a huge web of interrelated property companies, effectively gets 110 years for free? I understand that WCC wants to cut central car parking, not before time, so the £25,000 per year would presumably diminish anyway. But is this really the best they can do? I'd be reassured if Assura were actually still the medical providers they started out as. But in 2012, according to Companies House, they became instead a REIT, a Real Estate Investment Trust. I expect their shareholders are very pleased with WCC and the NHS. Obviously, they still have to provide the building, but if I'm wrong, I apologise to WCC's advisers. That's from Judith Martin, Rumsey Road, Winchester.
This letter is from Air Vice Marshal Chris Elliott, RAF Veterans. "Sir, earlier this month, the Prime Minister announced a third national lockdown. Although necessary, these measures mean many of our veterans will be facing the next several weeks or months completely alone. And while the vaccine rollout out across the country provides some hope, social isolation and loneliness poses a real threat to our elderly this winter, among them many former RAF personnel and their partners, supported by the fund. To help combat this, last year the RAF Benevolent Fund introduced a weekly check and chat service to support members of the RAF family experiencing loneliness. I speak to one such gentleman every Tuesday. He lives alone and spent much of 2020 totally isolated, and for him this service truly is a lifeline. We chat about what he's been up to, what he's cooking for tea, to his time in the RAF, and often I'm the only person he will speak to for days. The fund also facilitates weekly telephone friendship groups, provides access to a listening and counselling service, relationship counselling support, and an online wellbeing portal to help support emotional wellbeing amongst the veteran community. Throughout the pandemic, many of us have learnt more about our neighbours and local community. That's why we're calling on the people of the South East consider whether they know any RAF veterans or their spouses or widows who may be experiencing loneliness. To refer someone to the RAF Benevolent Fund, please visit rafbf.org or call 0300 102 1919. And that's from Air Vice Marshal Chris Elliott, Chief Executive, RAF Benevolent Fund.
Chris Blackman's letter is entitled Slow Going. Sir, re-letters Slow Progress from Colin Butcher, Chronicle, December the 31st. The figure of 270 houses being completed at Barton Farm is indeed alarming, and the figure of 72 houses being completed each year would mean that the 2,000 homes will not be completed until 2044. But I think to suggest that Carla Homes should consider selling some parcels of land to alternative developers to speed things up may be missing the point. I have no doubt that if Carla Homes wanted to speed up completion of the project, they could and would indeed employ more subcontractors and contractors to do just that. The truth, however, is that supply and demand dictates the market price of new houses, and if there were hundreds of completed new build houses on the market at the same time, the price would have to fall to sell them, thus reducing profit. The developer would never let that happen. I don't know if there are any time constraints placed upon developers when they are granted planning consent on such projects. If there are, then the council should be rigorously pursuing this, as we are told by central government that we have to have this scale of development to fulfil the requirements of the house building targets and reduce the housing shortage. If there are not such time constraints set out in the permissions, I would suggest that there need to be. That may focus the minds of developers and make them less eager to tear down our larger housing stock to build flats or rip up our countryside as proposed for Royal Down. So writes Chris Blackman, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this letter is from Simon Lever, Juniper Close Badger Farm on Station Approach. So when the Conservative-run City Council drew up plans for Station Approach, including office space, it was heralded as an ideally located, worthy initiative, addressing the needs of individuals and companies. The COVID-19 pandemic has changed the way companies and people function. Many work from home, visiting headquarters perhaps once a week. Further, companies are seeking to reduce expensive London office space for flexible workspaces outside the capital. Winchester is ideal. The original Conservative City Council-inspired Station Approach project, together with a sizeable grant, was scuppered seemingly by one individual's interference. Now the City Council is stating, Chronicle January the 7th, that it envisaged a major office development at Station Approach to broaden the city's economy. Station Approach was the original initiative of the Conservative-led City Council. Time has been lost. COVID-19 is a reality. Companies will seek flexible office space and Station Approach is an ideal location. Had the original Conservative City Council plans not been hijacked, we would be closer to providing what the market requires, thus benefiting Winchester. Optimistically, we will see our way through this pandemic, and perhaps everyone will be kinder and work together. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
The title of Margaret Grant's letter is Bygone Times. Sir, here's another memory rouser for past customers of Barlow's the Butcher on Stockbridge Road, Winchester. The smell of freshly scrubbed floors covered in sawdust, white aprons and coats with rolled-up sleeves revealing muscular forearms still comes to me. Stainless steel trays filled with various cuts of meat, not to forget the sausages, recipe passed down, of course. These trays separated in the spring by young green sprigs of beech leaves brought in by a lady of the countryside, Mrs. Harfield. the staff of Mr. Barlow himself, Bill, Stan, Mr. Erne Wilde, and my husband, known as Robbie in his working circles, not forgetting Miss Wright behind the glass in the office taking cash and orders to be delivered by Morris Minor or minivan, maybe in earlier days by bicycle with basket. Christmas was a time of long hours and exhaustion, all poultry being drawn, dressed and hung, along with joints and hams in the back shop. The High Street shop had the same standards. A man could be taken off the front counter to make sure a queue was kept. "Must be best meat and prices here," a good old-fashioned sales trick by Mr. Barlow. Well, that's this week's Grey Matter stirrer. So writes Margaret Grant, Butterton Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we move on to the editorial Chronicle comment. And it's headed, "The Limits of Free Speech Are Reached." No one is more committed defender of free speech than the Hampshire Chronicle, or more aware of how it has been won over the centuries. But there are limits. The well-known one is not being allowed to shout fire in a crowded theatre. And there should be no free speech on lies. Or when an idiot goes around hospitals in Hampshire and takes photos of empty corridors to support a ludicrous belief that COVID-19 is exaggerated. The person was rightly fined by the police for leaving home without a valid reason. She should also be publicly named. The problem is that now everyone is a publisher, even people of limited intelligence. Being dim but not inflicting your stupidity on others is one thing. Being thick and then, as this woman did, pushing a baseless theory about COVID is another. One of the answers is to remove anonymity from the internet. Anyone who publishes anything online should have their name clear to see and their address registered. Anyone can stand on the butter cross and say what they like, but no one has the right to spout lies with their identity masked. And now we have first person, I think, John.
Yes, first person for this week is written by George Hayter, and he entitles it, "Maybe One Day We'll Go Back In." When I was a boy, we went to the same place for our family holiday every year. Towing a caravan, we drove from Hampshire to Scotland because my mother was Scottish. We always stopped in Edinburgh and stayed with our Scottish relatives and then toured the Highlands. Those annual fortnights north of the border drummed into me that I am half Scottish. As a half Scot, I was shocked by this month's Focal Data opinion poll, which found that if a general election were held now, the Scottish Nationalists would win almost every constituency in Scotland. The SNP would take 57 of the 59 Scottish seats. My worry is that such overwhelming support for a party whose purpose is independence would make it hard for Westminster to deprive Scotland of another independence referendum. More so if Labour forms a coalition government with the SNP, as seems possible, because polls now show Labour and Conservatives neck and neck. Scottish voters were annoyed by Brexit because most of them voted Remain, and they have been further disillusioned by Boris Johnson's handling of the pandemic. So it now seems to me virtually certain that a second independence referendum will result in Scotland leaving the UK. With only us and Wales remaining, we might want to invent a new name. Certainly leaving the word Great in front of Great Britain would look sad and possibly comical. Northern Ireland has been moving closer to the Irish Republic, so a union between them is no longer unimaginable. If that were to happen, reducing the UK to only England and Wales, then one has to wonder if Wales might break away too. I feel slightly responsible for the likely shrinking of our country, because I helped sucker UKIP when it started in the 1990s. I voted UKIP when few people did. I felt that Britain should preserve its island status in terms of sovereignty, whatever the economic cost. I thought we owed that to Admiral Nelson. Now I've mellowed, and think that Britain, like the other responsible nations, is best seeking a stable future as part of a community. When I voted UKIP, I had no idea it would lead to me feeling a foreigner in my own country. But that now looks almost certain to happen. I don't call myself Scottish or English. I'm British. We won't be Britain if Scotland goes, so I will lose my country. Boris Johnson achieved a stunning victory in the Brexit negotiations. Now we can enjoy sovereignty as well as the EU's wealth-producing tariff-free regime. I didn't believe that such a cake-and-eat-it agreement was possible. But I'm unhappy out of Europe. Distancing ourselves from the neighbours doesn't feel good, and our negotiations victory feels hollow. I am ashamed of our over-indignant negotiating and embarrassed by Boris. Now that the Russian and Chinese dictatorships are becoming more aggressive, the democratic world needs unity, not division. With the US confused and divided, the EU will need to take more responsibility for the defence of freedom. Unfortunately, the EU is weakened by our departure. In the Brexit referendum, I voted Remain. That was a U-turn from my UKIP vote a quarter century earlier. It's okay to change your mind, as I did. I know everyone is sick of Brussels in the news, but bear in mind that the referendum was close, 48% against Brexit. I was sure some of those 16 million voters would be campaigning by now for Britain to reapply for EU membership. I still think there will be a return campaign. Return enthusiasts are probably waiting to see whether our economic growth continues to lag behind the EU or zips ahead of it. Or maybe they want to see if Mediterranean holiday hassle makes the public want to regain free movement. Perhaps public opinion depends on how long the non-EU queue is at passport control.
Thank you. And now we have a couple of items from Belgarum. The first one, very pertinent, based on that last article from George Hayter. And it's headed, More British than English. More people in Winchester are identifying as British than before the EU referendum, figures suggest, whilst fewer say they are English. That's according to the Office for National Statistics annual population survey, which asks a sample of people how they would describe their national identity. The survey shows 73% of people in Winchester identified as British in the year to June 2020, up from 59% 4 years earlier, in the run-up to the EU referendum. But Englishness is on the decline. 43% said they were English, compared to 63% in the year to June 2016. In the survey, people can identify as British, English, Irish, Scottish, Welsh, or other. Respondents can choose as many options as they think apply to them, so could choose English and British as dual identities. The shift in Winchester was reflected across England as a whole, while the proportion who felt they were British rose from 49% to 56% over the period. Those opting for English dropped from 52% to 47%. The second item from Belgarum, mystery poem on the City Guildhall. It's easily missed, but a clever piece of guerrilla poetry has been on prominent, if unobtrusive, display in Winchester. The official-looking sign, and it's it looks rather like a blue plaque sign, there's a photograph of it attached to the Guildhall, has been designed and created to look like a blue traffic sign, but closer inspection reveals it to be a poem called A Visit from Coronavirus. It's doggerel, of course, but a clever way of getting a message across, although what the message might be is not wholly apparent. The identity of the poet is also unknown, as is the view of the City Council, which is presumably unaware of its presence, as most staff are working from home in these COVID times. I think the shame is that they don't give us the wording of what's on the on the actual poem, but they don't. Okay, that concludes the items of special interest. And then we move on to lighting up time. Yes, lighting up time ends on Friday the 15th of January at 8:03 a.m. and begins at 4:27 p.m. And on Wednesday the 20th of January, it ends at 7:58 a.m. and begins at 4:35 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz LeGrice on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And now we continue with items of general news.
Progress on the new sport and leisure centre at Bar End. Winchester's Sport and Leisure Park is entering a new phase of construction. Contractors have weatherproofed the building and key features are being installed. Access to the site has been completed from Bar End Road, and road access and parking will be complemented by improved cycle routes and footpaths. Aspects of the centre for those with disabilities include door openings designed for sports wheelchairs, an independent access point to the hydrotherapy and physiotherapy suite, and all parts of the building benefiting from natural daylight, as well as artificial lighting and acoustic modelling to support those with visual and hearing impairments. Contrasting shades and colours of surfaces between the floors and walls will also provide additional definition and ease of use for those with visual impairment. The fitness and conditioning suite is being built at a single level to provide step-free access, and the open sports hall will be installed with acoustic screening and a treatment applied to all surfaces. These measures are designed to provide a better experience for spatially affected users and those with hearing impairment. The 50-metre pool, designed to cater for national competitions, mixed groups and varying training levels, boasts several features, including enhanced acoustic treatment to enable coaching and easy communication without excessive background noise. A warm-up and cool-down training pool will be fully submersible with a self-control lift into the water, and a mobile floor benefiting from steps instead of ladders. The poolside platform lift will allow the use of fully reclined flatbed trolleys and wheelchairs to accommodate paraplegic, tetraplegic and bariatric users, and competitors will benefit from Swiss timing technology, which generates both visual and audible signals. The changing facilities all include 2-metre-wide routes, which have been carefully planned to facilitate ease of movement for people with disabilities and across the building. There will also be accessible toilets, showers, adjustable basins and step-free access to all areas. And this article is accompanied by 2 photographs. There's one of the inside the 50-metre swimming pool at the new sports centre, which is, I hadn't realised how far 50 metres is. And then there's an aerial view of the construction, which is fascinating. I'm astonished at how enormous this development's going to be. It all looks absolutely tip-top.
And from one development project to another, pavilion project scheme defended. The future of a proposal for a new sports pavilion in Winchester was being raised at a council last night. This newspaper has reported uncertainty over the £590,000 project for North Walls Recreation Ground, with the City Council reviewing its commitment to the community-led project. Kim Gottlieb, former councillor, asked council leader Lucille Thompson yesterday evening after the Chronicle went to press. "The North Walls Pavilion is a jewel of a building," he said, "and being involved with its progress was one of the things I most enjoyed in my time as a councillor. It's not just the wonderful facility it would provide for residents across the city and beyond, but that it shows how the council could work with the community, as it says on its leaflet. It would also show that the council was prepared to promote high-quality civic architecture. The proposal might be a very modest amount over budget, but it has the great advantage over any alternative idea of being fully designed and costed and ready to go. Any alternative idea would take several years and much more money. I would ask the leader, can she please provide an assurance that every possible effort will be made by the council to ensure that the current proposal is built and gives everyone something to celebrate in 2021. And there are two pictures, one of the existing rather faded pavilion building, wooden clad, and an artist impression of the proposed new multi-purpose pavilion, much bigger than the existing one, and all designed in wood in keeping with the surrounding area.
City stalwarts to retire after decades of service. A pair of Winchester stalwarts are set to retire from their posts after years of service to justice and education. The Vice-Chancellor of Winchester, Professor Joy Carter, and the Recorder of Winchester, Judge Keith Cutler, will step down after 15 and 12 years respectively. Professor Carter, 65, will step down at the end of March. During her time, she has overseen significant growth of the university, with student numbers more than doubling, expansion of the course portfolio, and a bolstering of the university's standing within the city, region, UK and abroad. The Board of Governors has begun the selection process for a new Vice-Chancellor, who would ideally be in place for the beginning of the new academic year. In the meantime, Deputy Vice-Chancellor, the Reverend Professor Liz Stewart, who in April will have been at the university for 23 years and Deputy Vice-Chancellor for 13 years, will be Vice-Chancellor. He has jailed murderers, attackers, and even a naked rambler, but now, after more than a decade, Judge Keith Cutler will pack away his wig for the final time on January the 29th. Once named the smiling assassin by court staff, the stalwart, known for his swift but stern sentencing style, has looked back at his time in the profession. Called to the bar in July 1972, Judge Cutler became a circuit judge in 1996 and was later appointed as the resident judge for Salisbury in 2003 before the two courts amalgamated in 2009. Judge Cutler was due to retire in the summer last year, having reached the age of 70, the mandatory retirement age for judges, but was asked to remain as the country dealt with the pandemic. "I will be sorry to leave it," he said, "but at the same time, all good things come to an end."
Where are the vaccine centres? Vaccines are being rolled out across the country to try and end this pandemic, but where in Hampshire are you able to get the jab? These are not walk-in centres, and jabs are only issued after appointments, with priority being given to the elderly, vulnerable and health workers. The centres in the Winchester district currently open are Winchester Holiday Inn, Colden Common, Badger Farm Community Centre, Winchester. But four vaccination centres able to deliver up to 3,000 COVID-19 vaccines a day are also set to open up elsewhere in Hampshire. The facilities would be able to deliver up to 3,000 vaccines a day. Further details are yet to be revealed, but according to official NHS documents, the four facilities are expected to open to the public this month. The news was confirmed in a meeting at Hampshire County Council. A new hospital hub is also expected to be set up at Andover War Memorial Hospital. According to health bosses, the NHS will contact people when it is their turn to receive the vaccine. The vaccination centres are expected to be in addition to the vaccination programmes rolled out by GP surgeries across Hampshire. Around 1.7 million people across Hampshire will have to be vaccinated, and 39,000 residents have already received the first dose of the vaccine. Chris Whitty urges people to stay at home ahead of worst weeks of pandemic. The vaccination centres across the county are going to be delivered by Solent NHS Trust.
Locked out of virus vaccination centre without warning. Elderly people in Winchester were left in the dark after they arrived to receive their COVID jab, only to find the vaccination centre closed. Rodney Graham's mother, Audrey, aged 81, was told to turn up at the Holiday Inn, Telegraph Way in Winchester, on Tuesday. But when she, like many others, got to the hotel, they were met with signs reading, "Closed." Mr. Graham said that there were no volunteers or members of staff present to explain the situation to those who had arrived. He told the Chronicle, "She got to the front door of the Holiday Inn and they were locked, and signage on the front door said it was closed." He continued, "My mother, having been through this whole thing of shielding for 10 months, was somewhat surprised and disappointed about the whole thing. Frankly, it's just a bit of a farce." Mrs. Graham was given her first vaccination in December and was not contacted to say that the centre wouldn't be open for her second jab this week. She later contacted her GP, who has now advised her that her second vaccination has been delayed. Earlier this month, the government said that there would be a delay in giving the second dose of COVID-19 vaccines. Experts advising the government, including the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, said that the focus should be on giving at-risk people the first dose of whichever vaccine they receive, rather than providing the required two doses in as short a time as possible. This now means the second dose of both the Oxford AstraZeneca and the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccines will be within 12 weeks of the first. Rachel King, Director of Commissioning South West for NHS West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group, said the COVID-19 vaccination programme is one of the largest programmes ever undertaken by the NHS, and frontline teams and support staff are working hard to protect people and save lives as quickly as possible. Regrettably, we are aware that there were problems contacting all the people attending a clinic at Winchester Holiday Inn this week, and some people were inconvenienced as a result. We apologise unreservedly to anyone affected.
Xena survived wartime bombing to reach 100 years. She survived many air raids in her younger years, but life is far quieter for Lady Xena David these days, living at Tegfield House Care Home in Winchester for the last 4 years. On Tuesday, she celebrated her 100th birthday, a milestone that would have seemed almost impossible during World War II. Lady Xena was married to eminent judge Sir Robin David, QC. At the start of the World War, she was 18 years old and undertaking work as a telephonist at the Liverpool Exchange, with nearby shipyards a target for German bombers. Following the war, she worked in the surveyors department for McAlpine Builders. She went on to marry and have a daughter and spent many years volunteering. In 1989, the Royal Women's Voluntary Service awarded Xena a long service medal for running Meals on Wheels in Cheshire for over 20 years. Lady Xena moved to Winchester upon her husband's retirement in 1997. And there's a lovely picture of Lady Xena David holding up a wreath of poppies, celebrating her 100th birthday.
It is a slap in the face of law-abiding people. A Meon Valley man has been left furious after a meadow was developed on an industrial scale without any planning permission. Richard Curran, who lives next to the field in Alma Lane, Upham, compared the finished product to Blackpool Illuminations. He believes the developer, Emma Evans, has broken several planning rules after felling mature trees, removing hedgerows and installing bright lights. Now he is hoping Winchester City Council's planning department will take action. "This first came to light back in August," said Mr. Curran. "There were dozens of diggers, dumpers and lorries arriving at the meadow." Mr. Curran works for Network Rail as a senior electrical control room operator. "There's now a 92-foot barn and a 60-metre by 30-metre manege. The lights, well, It's like Blackpool Illuminations. The amount of lorries I've seen is astronomical. This really is an industrial-scale operation. I had some engagement with the Parish Council and the City Council planning portal because I could see that mature trees had been felled and hedgerows had been completely removed. Something significant was happening. I had a letter back from the planning department to say that the development had been placed on a priority watch list, and that was left there. Since then, I think environmental and ecological planning rule has been broken, every one. It's a joke. Everything about it is a slap in the face of law-abiding people. The whole area has been changed because of the lack of enforcement. Mr. Curran is also concerned that the lights from the development, which are left on 24/7, will cause barn owls to lose the dark spaces in which they reside. Emma Evans has submitted a planning application to Winchester City Council. A decision is yet to be made. The Chronicle has contacted Winchester City Council and awaits a response. No contact details were available for Ms. Evans or her agent, Richard Stone, based in Shirrell Heath, on the City Council planning portal.
Police issue 567 fines for flouting the COVID law. Hampshire Police issued more than 500 fines for breaches of coronavirus laws during the first 9 months of the pandemic. New figures show that 567 fixed penalty notices were handed to businesses and individuals in the county between March the 27th last year and December the 20th. Royston Smith, the Tory MP for Southampton Itchen, said, "It's a shame that any fines have to be handed out, but sadly people are still not following the rules. The government are not asking people to comply, it's the law. The more people ignore the rules, the more people become infected and the more people will die. We can finally see light at the end of the tunnel, but people must follow the rules until the vaccination programme is complete." Alan Whitehead, the Labour MP for Southampton Test, said a minority of people were not following the rules put in place to keep everyone safe. He said, "That puts pressure on an already stretched police force who have to administer these fines, not to mention they risk spreading the virus and putting further strain on the NHS. I urge those who haven't been following the rules to be more responsible and keep themselves and others safe." Police have vowed to take an even tougher approach during the latest lockdown. National Police Chiefs Council Chairman Martin Hewitt said, "Those who blatantly ignore the regulations should expect to receive a fixed penalty notice. We'll target our resources towards those who commit the most serious breaches and put others at risk through their behaviour."
Help needed to trace origins of slab. An auction house is looking for the public's help in tracing the origins of a large Roman marble slab which turned up in a garden on the Hampshire-Wiltshire border. The weighty rock was unearthed from the rockery of a garden in White Parish about 20 years ago and used for almost 10 years as a mounting block in the owner's stable before she one day noticed a laurel wreath carved into its surface. An archaeologist then identified it as dating to the 2nd century AD with probable origins to Greece or Asia Minor. Artifacts of this type often came into England as the result of grand tours in the late 18th and 19th century, when wealthy aristocrats would tour Europe learning about classical art and culture, explained antiquities specialist Will Hobbs at Woolley and Wallace. We assume that is how it entered the UK, but what is a complete mystery is how it ended up in a domestic garden, and that's where we'd like the public's help. The bungalow on Common Road in White Parish was one of several built in the mid-1960s, and the auctioneers are hoping that someone who perhaps lived in the area at the time, or who worked on the construction, might recall the origins of some of the rubble used. There are several possibilities of where the stone might have originated, continued Will Hobbs. Both Cowsfield House and Broxmoor House were very close to White Parish and were demolished in 1949 after having been requisitioned by the army during the war. But we also know that the house at what is now Poulton's Park was destroyed by fire in 1963, and so possibly rubble from there was reused at building sites in the area shortly afterwards. The marble slab is being sold in Salisbury at Woolley and Wallace on February the 16th, with a pre-sale estimate of between £10,000 and £15,000. Now, if any of you people listening can shed any light on this, you can call Woolley and Wallace on 01722 424 524. That's 01722 424 524.
Free surveys for cold homes. Residents across the district who feel cold in their own homes could be entitled to a free energy survey. Winchester City Council is working with Agility Eco on their local energy assistance programme, which provides the service to low-income households or those suffering from fuel poverty. The scheme supplies eligible households with a free home visit to provide advice. Councillor Linda Murphy said, "We are delighted to offer support to the most vulnerable members of our community through our partnership with Agility Eco to make houses more energy efficient. As our ambitious plans to become a carbon neutral district by 2030 near, this is one way we can take a step closer to meet our groundbreaking target. Now more than ever, we must look after those who need support, care and compassion. And the LEAP, Local Energy Assistance Programme, scheme is just one way we can provide this. As we move into the winter months, we understand the difficult times ahead for some households. We hope the scheme can help relieve some of the pressure." Agility Eco and LEAP Home Energy Advisors help residents with identifying energy-wasting products in the house and replacing them with energy-efficient alternatives, such as radiator panels, chimney balloons, LED light bulbs and more. Despite nationwide COVID-19 restrictions, LEAP's services continue via telephone, where residents can access expert energy advice, help with checking their energy tariffs, or support with energy suppliers. To refer yourself or someone else in the Winchester District, which includes parts of the Mearne Valley, call 0800 060 7567. That's 0800 060 7567.
Rise in cases starts to slow down. Signs are that the recent spike in COVID cases is continuing to ease in Winchester District. In many areas, the rate of increase has levelled off, a trend for several days. Winchester is now the only district in Hampshire, and one of only two in the South East, along with West Berkshire, not coloured either purple or black on the official government map. It means its infection rate is now below 400 per 100,000 people for the first time since the 7 days to Christmas Eve. In the 7 days to Thursday, January the 7th, the most recent for which these figures are available, there were 476 cases, down 124, or 20.7% for a rolling number per 100,000 of 381.2. But in the last 7 days to Tuesday, 11 deaths in the district have been reported, compared to just one in the week before. These are likely to have been people infected several weeks ago. The worst affected place for cases remains Denmead and Southwick, where there have been 79 new cases, down 17 week on week, a drop of 42%, with a rolling number of 770.3, down from 799.5. Things are also cooling in the hot spot of Oliver's Battery and Hursley. In the 7 days to January the 7th, 23 cases reported, down 28 on the previous 7 days, a decrease of 54.9%. Another area that had seen sharp rises was South Wanston, Sutton Scotney and Micheldever. In the 7 days to January the 7th, there have been 29 cases, down one, for a rolling rate of 493.4, now below the UK average and down from 646.5 on January the 3rd. Another 24 people are reported to have died of COVID-19 in the Hampshire County Council area on Tuesday. It brings to 1,300 the death toll since the start of the pandemic, or a rate of 94 per 100,000. In the last 2 days, 16 deaths have been reported at Hampshire Hospitals Trust, which includes the RHCH, meaning 281 people have died since the start of the pandemic. In the Winchester City Council district, 11 people are reported to have died in the last week, to bring fatalities to 117, or 93.9 per 100,000. In Southampton, the figure is 177, or 70.1 per 100,000. And in Portsmouth, the figure is 179, or 83.3 per 100,000. The levelling off of cases in Winchester District continues. The number of cases reported in the last 7 days is lower than in the previous week. On Tuesday, there were 60 cases, taking to 452 the number in the last 7 days. The previous 7 days had seen 589 cases. The number of cases in the Winchester district since the start of the pandemic is now 3,562, an infection rate of 2,852 per 100,000, below the UK average of 4,880. A further 27 COVID-19 deaths have been reported by the NHS in Hampshire on Tuesday. The double-digit increases of recent days are continuing.
New A31 lorry park working well. The new lorry park near Winchester for lorries heading for France is said to be working well. A westbound section on the A31 dual carriageway between Winchester and Alresford has been set aside to deal with potential backlogs at Portsmouth Ferryport post a no-trade deal Brexit. A county council spokesperson said, "The triage point on the A31 is part of Operation Transmission and it's working well, and has started processing 316 lorries since it became operational, the majority of which are compliant with border-ready paperwork, with each taking just a few minutes to process."
Marwell loses £4 million in year. Marwell Zoo has lost £4 million since the start of the COVID pandemic. Now bosses say the zoo needs support more than ever after being forced to close again in the latest lockdown. Each month, the zoo pays out £220,000 to care for its animals. It also supports its conservation programmes. An online fundraiser has now been set up with £79,932 raised so far. A spokesperson said, "We're facing our toughest challenge in our nearly 50-year history."
Royal Down demo changed. A planned protest over the 5,000-home Royal Down scheme will be held online due to the national lockdown. Members of the Save South Winchester campaign had originally planned to hold a socially distanced march around the site perimeter on January the 24th. The aim was to plant 100 wild roses, the Hampshire Rose, close to the site entrance of near Down Farm off Port Lane, within walking distance of Compton Down, Oliver's Battery and Hursley. Now the event will be held virtually between noon and 1pm on that date, January the 24th. Further details are yet to be released by campaign leaders, Councillor David Killeen, Chairman of Hursley Parish Council, and County Councillor Jan Warwick. A link to the online protest is expected to be posted in the Save South Winchester Facebook page soon. Royaldown is the scheme to build 5,000 homes between Winchester and Hursley. If it comes to fruition, it will offer 3,000 more homes than the Barton Farm development on Andover Road. The plans include a new access road, two primary schools, a secondary school, a park and ride, a health centre and several surrounding solar farms. Local residents and councillors are working together to stop the scheme altogether.
Interview with Uni before TV return. She is expected to return to TV screens across the nation soon. Winchester's own Hannah Williams, who is competing on The Voice UK, has progressed from the unseen auditions, moving one step closer to the finals. She is on Sir Tom Jones's team, and if the show follows its usual format, will be performing in the battle round on Saturday, January the 23rd. As previously reported, the 38-year-old is a vocal consultant and teacher at Winchester University, where she graduated from in 2006. Speaking in an online interview with the Uni's Music Centre director, Neil Valentine, she described her journey so far. "There are some things that I'm not allowed to say," said Hannah, "but the opportunity to do this became available back in spring last year. I had a whole string of auditions on Zoom and meetings with producers. I'd say I performed 30 to 40 songs over the period from March onwards. It's a long process, but it has been absolutely amazing. I can imagine it would normally be a bit more intense with face-to-face auditions in groups. But COVID pushed the process to Zoom. It is a more private and detached encounter." Hannah is a soul singer who also fronts Hannah Williams and the Affirmations, a Bristol-based band. In 2017, her vocals were sampled on Jay-Z's title track 444. She continued, "A singing competition on TV is not something that I would usually even consider. But I thought, you know what? No, sorry. But I thought, you know what? It's 2020. The apocalypse has happened. What the hell else is there to do?" Hannah held a workshop with the university on Wednesday, January the 13th, to help encourage and guide young performers. Professor Elizabeth Stewart, first Deputy Vice Chancellor of the University of Winchester, said, "The University of Winchester is delighted and very proud to see Hannah on The Voice. We have enjoyed her amazing voice over many years, and we are delighted to now share it with Sir Tom Jones and the rest of the nation."
This should never have happened. A Meon Valley man who got involved with a thoroughly bad lot of people died on Christmas Day. Martin John Hales of Vine Gardens in Winchester Road, Bishop's Waltham, had a history of mental health problems and drug misuse. At an inquest in Winchester, area coroner Rosamond Rhodes Kemp described Mr. Hales' life in the years leading up to his death. She said, "Martin was using quite a lot of drugs. It must have cost him a fortune. We know he had ongoing depression and suffered from severe anxiety attacks. At one point, he got in with a thoroughly bad lot who took over his flat. I understand there were people threatening him and he was left frightened in his own home. He was pursued by very unpleasant people and it was a no-win situation. They continued to threaten him even after he managed to get them out of the flat." Mr. Hales' mother, Linda Hales, continued to explain the troubles her son had. She said, "Our oldest son died in 2001, and both myself and Martin were unable to come to terms with this. He found it hard to talk about. Sometimes it seemed as if he'd given up on life. He married and had a son who he loved dearly, but the marriage didn't last. The people he met took advantage of him, and we tried to get them out of the flat, but we were scared of them. I know that on one occasion he was threatened with a gun. I loved him so much. This should never have happened." David Martin, a friend of Mr. Hales, who was with him hours before his death, provided a statement to the coroner's office. The statement said, I've known Martin for 6.5 years. He was a drug addict, and I once tried to get him to go to rehab. On Christmas Eve, we were at his flat with two other friends. I left with the two to go to another neighbour's flat. At 2:55 a.m. I took the dog out and passed Martin's rear patio. The curtains were still open and the lights on. Mr. Martin called an ambulance to Mr. Hale's flat, where he was found. Dr. Hayley Burnley conducted a post-mortem on the body. She found a mixture of drugs in his system, including cocaine and morphine, and concluded he died by multiple drug toxicity. The coroner, Rosamond Rhodes Kemp, accepted this medical cause of death and concluded the inquest as a drug-related death.
Fatal, from one, you know, cheerful case to another, fatal crash case. A lorry driver has denied causing a collision which killed a motorcyclist on the A32. Jack Burgess, 22, was involved in a crash with three other vehicles on June the 29th, 2019, at Warnford. He died in hospital the next day. Last Wednesday, Lucien Sorin Todor appeared at Winchester Crown Court, where he pleaded not guilty to causing death by dangerous driving. The court was told that the 51-year-old was driving a Scania articulated lorry when the collision occurred on the A32 close to the junction with Hayden Lane. Todor of Andrew Crescent, Waterlooville, will go on trial at the same court on June the 1st.
And another report on a court case from a collision. Driver 49 denies causing collision. A driver has denied causing a collision in Bishop's Waltham, which left a motorcyclist fighting for life. Darren Howitt appeared at Winchester Crown Court on Wednesday of last week, where he pleaded not guilty to driving without due care and attention on Coppice Hill on March the 12th last year. Emergency services were called to the road at 2:36 p.m. to reports of a collision involving a VW Golf and two motorcycles. It's alleged that the 49-year-old's driving caused serious injury to Aaron Alford. Howitt of Bishopsfield Wharf Road, Fareham, is also accused of failing to stop at the scene, along with driving without the correct insurance or a driving licence. At the time of the incident, a police spokesperson said, "As a result, one of the motorcyclists has suffered life-threatening injuries and has been taken to hospital." Howitt will go on trial at the same court on August the 16th.
City centre ban for shoplifter. A Winchester man who went on a pre-Christmas shoplifting spree has been banned from the city centre. David James Thorne, 38, admitted four offences, targeting Boots and Sainsbury's between November the 9th and December the 9th, Basingstoke Magistrates Court heard. He stole Christmas gift sets, alcohol, fragrances and cosmetics. Thorne of Christchurch Road received a community order and was banned from the city centre for 3 months until 8 p.m. on March the 23rd. It will be electronically monitored. He will only be allowed to enter the exclusion zone for a prior appointment with his probation officer. Magistrates also ordered he pay £50 compensation with the money to be deducted from benefits.
Work underway on Trinity Extension. Progress can now be seen on building work for the major extension to the Trinity Centre in Winchester. The charity is building flats for clients of the drop-in centre on Derngate. The reopening of the public car park following the completion of the flood defence scheme has revealed the state of play. The work started in the autumn on building 12 flats for the homeless and is set to open in May. The Under One Roof at Trinity will comprise flatlets offered on a housing first basis for people most in need who are rough sleeping repeatedly in Winchester. The flatlets will have ensuite bathrooms to reduce the risk of cross-infection from COVID-19 or future pandemics. Trinity aims to build up to supporting 25 rough sleeping people annually, plus 150 non-residents receiving therapeutic support in the community. It's been described by Homeless Link as one of the first congregate housing first schemes developed in the UK, with high-quality accommodation complemented by all the facilities of Trinity's purpose-built day centre. Residents will be part of a therapeutic community within a psychologically informed environment and offered individualised person-centred support with in-house medical, mental health, counselling and learning programmes, providing the opportunity for transformational life change. Trinity Winchester's Chief Executive Sue McKenna said, "We are so encouraged every day to watch the progress of the building coming to life. It's been a long-term ambition to be able to give a safe, supported home to those in need. And with the help of all our supporters in the community, this is now becoming a reality." The cost of the scheme is £1.5 million, and following the initial lead gift of £500,000 from the Deflog VQ Trust, funding for the project was raised mainly through other trusts and foundations.
Flood. Public asked for views. Civic chiefs have launched a survey into the flash flooding that hit Winchester last August. A monsoon inundated parts of the city centre and other areas such as Full Flood and St Cross on August the 27th. Hampshire County Council is undertaking a formal investigation into the causes and effects of the flooding. Councillor Rob Humby, Deputy Leader and Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said, "I promised a full investigation into the flooding in Winchester last summer, and I'm pleased to say it is well underway. Part of this investigation is a survey, and I would encourage as many people to take part in this as possible so that we can understand how the flooding affected people. The County Council is committed to doing all it can to reduce the risk of flooding for communities across Hampshire. The rainfall we saw on August the 27th was exceptional, with 35 millimetres falling in just 15 minutes. That's half the average August rainfall. The findings of this investigation will be published, and we will use them to try and identify actions that will either reduce the likelihood of similar events happening again in the future or reduce their impact. Extreme weather events such as these also underline the importance of all our efforts to mitigate and tackle the impact of climate change, whether those are extremes of heat, cold or rainfall."
Police drop investigation into Woodland rape. Police have dropped an investigation into an alleged rape in a Winchester suburb last summer. A major investigation was launched after reports that a woman was attacked in Woodland at Whiteshoot Ridge, Badger Farm, in July. But the police, after inquiries by the Chronicle, have revealed that the investigation has ended with no one being arrested or charged. In a statement, the police said, "A full and thorough investigation has been conducted and all identified lines of inquiry have been followed. The decision has now been made to file this investigation. Should any further lines of inquiry be identified or information come to light, the case will be reopened." Meanwhile, inquiries are ongoing into the rape of a woman in the alleyway next to St Luke's Church in Stanmore. Three men attacked the victim on Saturday, October the 24th.
Tips to stay open in new lockdown. Tips across Hampshire are set to remain open amid the third lockdown. Hampshire County Council said all the county's household waste recycling centres, HWRCs, will remain open for those who need to use them. Residents who want to visit a tip will need to make a booking in advance. The council is urging the public to check the website ahead of their visit in case a site needs to close at short notice due to staffing levels being impacted by COVID-19. Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, Councillor Rob Humby, said, "The booking system is working well and social distancing measures are in place. The sites will continue to accept as many of the usual household waste materials as they can while the onward market accepts them. Booking slots are available 7 days in advance by phone on 02380 179949 I'll repeat that. 02380 179 949.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Sue Frayne and Anne Brew. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And, of course, thanks to our one reader, John Richards.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.